Picture a typical day at the Indy 500 Daytona or even the Monaco Grand Prix. A lot of exhaust, a lot of burning rubber, and, well, a lot of men driving race cars. Now, imagine the evolution of that scene. Cars running on hydrogen fuel cells, an isolated glacial backdrop, teams of men and women drivers, and a Gen Z audience watching excitedly from their tablets and iPhones. This might sound pretty far out, but then again, an auto race isn't usually wholly environmentally green or watched entirely from the virtual sphere. Welcome to the Future Car Podcast. I'm your host, Ed Bernardin, and in our last episode, I spoke with Andretti United driver Katie Munnings about the extreme E mission of sustainability, her thoughts on the series gender equality, and what it's like to race in some of the world's most beautiful and remote locations. In today's episode, the conversation continues as Katie tells me about the younger extreme E fans and the part a video gaming audience plays in a race with no in-person audience. We discuss the ups and downs of having your racing face exposed to cameras, what it's like to get mainstream visibility, and how it feels to be an example for a younger generation. We also talk about the inevitability of electric cars in auto racing and whether she might have to make room for a certain British royal to join her team. Tune in and hear part two of my conversation with Andretti United Extreme E driver Katie Munnings on today's episode of the Future Car Podcast. You leave your TV show because your first love is racing. Extreme E is a bit of a cross. It's not really spectator-based, but more relies on television and to get the message out. That's the only way to watch Extreme E is by television. So in effect, you're really in another TV series now, except it's racing. So it's a true combination of your two loves.
Yeah, and it's nice because it's a lot easier when someone's asking you about a topic that you specialize in. It's easier from that side. I'm not remembering lines, but I still get to be around that buzz of the production and especially with the behind the scenes stuff that they're filming for the championship. It's fun. Like, it's fun to be a part of. And yeah, I still do bits of TV when I can and when I'm not really busy with the racing side. You get to experience some really cool stuff and meet some really cool people as well. But it's a difficult one. It's a really hard balance because at the same time, you want your name to be as a driver in the early parts of your career to have, you know, the best opportunities that you can from the performance side.
Well, speaking of meeting interesting people, there are a lot of big names of racing that are involved in Extreme E. Can you tell us about some of those people?
I was actually having that conversation with Timmy Hansen, who's my teammate. I first met him because I had a fan selfie with him when I was like, well, it must have been 2018. I went to one of his races in Rallycross and I think he won the world championship the year after. And I actually had a fan selfie with him. And then here I am 3 years later.
Did he
racing
remember
with him.
You?
Yeah, oh, he said he did. Yeah. Oh. I mean, I'm sure he would have said that to everyone that said that they'd met him before. So yeah, I did have a fan selfie with him. And yeah, I mean, we're racing against people like Sebastian Loeb, who obviously I grew up watching as one of the icons of World Rally, and Carlos Sainz. And as you say, like Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg have got teams as well. And it's really cool to be associated with those names. But also, one of the conversations that we had at the start of the season was we have to remember that it's a steering wheel and two pedals, so it's electric. So everyone's got the same tools, the same starting point. So don't give anyone any room on the track. You're all there because you've got potential and you've got the talent to do it. So just make sure that you're not being polite just because of you might be sat on the grid next to your icons.
I also heard, I believe in Senegal, that you actually gave a driving lesson to His Royal Highness Prince William.
Well, not in Senegal, actually. So where was I? I was filming. It was actually up in Scotland, so Knockhill
Racetrack. Oh, in Scotland, okay. Yeah. So we didn't have to go very far.
No, it was just before we went to Senegal. So he was up there doing, I think he had some royal duties up there. And then in the evening, he was able to come and drive the Extreme E car, which was really cool.
Is he a good driver?
He is such a good driver, yeah. I had no idea what to expect and I felt quite a lot of pressure because It's hard when you're sat next to somebody and you don't know if... I've been a rally instructor in my past, so I didn't know, like, if he could drive or if I was going to have to, say, brake now or whatever. So it was actually quite an interesting one because I was really nervous. Obviously, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to tell the Prince William what to do, but at the same time, you want to keep him safe in the car.
Yeah, I know. Did you say, Your Highness, please brake.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. But actually, he was really relaxed, really friendly, really excited to be doing it as well. I didn't really realise, but he's got such a love for fast cars and motorbikes. And so he was excited to be doing something different out of his usual day-to-day stuff. And it was a really cool experience. I don't think I'll be able to say that I'll be able to do that again.
What was the most surprising thing of driving around with the prince?
It was just how good he was in the car, really. I really wasn't expecting. I remember sitting next to him and him saying, oh, you know, I'm just having some fun. But I remember thinking you could actually be a rally driver. Like, I've sat next to a lot of rally drivers and he was really talented behind the wheel. So I was really surprised by that.
Do you think that Timmy should be scared that maybe you'll switch partners in the future?
That was actually the first text I sent after we'd finished the filming. I said to Timmy, like, you know, no pressure, but we have got someone that is might be a potential threat to your seat next year.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about how Extreme E works. I think there's an intent here also to draw in a younger fan base. You mentioned how you can get online and pledge your environmental points. Is that really the intended audience? Or is it all age groups? Since there aren't spectators, what are the main ways in which you actually use media to draw attention to the race and ultimately to improving the environment?
The audience is definitely aimed at the younger generation. So we can see that in the way that you've got things like Fan Boost and the Grid Play, which is the voting for the grid on the final race. I think those sort of things really come back to the generation that play video games and that are used to having some kind of influence over the sport that they're playing with. And so I think that's kind of direct. And that makes sense when you think of the electric market and who we're trying to appeal to and the younger generations buying electric cars in the future. Also, I think, though, the older generations, you've got icons of racing like Carlos Sainz, who would have been in like the pinnacle of rally against Michel Mouton, and you have him racing as one of the drivers in the championship. So obviously you're going to automatically attract his sort of following. And I think a lot of people are interested from the sporting side as well as to how the racing goes. So I think it's actually quite a broad mix. And also from non-rally fans, people that aren't involved with motorsport, because normally it can be quite niche and quite hidden away on TV. You know, you've got to be really looking for it to find it on the like the channels. And now I think that it's actually mainstream. I'll speak to, you know, my neighbours who have got no idea about motorsport, and they'll say, I saw you last Sunday. You were in Africa racing or whatever it might be.
What are you doing there?
Yeah. And so I think it's starting to become a bit more mainstream, which is cool for the off-road world.
So who are some of the automotive manufacturers or the big names of the automotive industry, motorsports that are involved in this?
For season one, it was kind of a bit like Formula E in the fact that it was one championship car. So it wasn't like manufacturers came on board and made a lot of different parts for the year one. They wanted it to be quite across the board. So we had competitive racing. So for the year one, there's none. I think GMC is supporting the Chip Ganassi team with the Hummer. So they've been able to do some bodywork changes to their Odyssey to obviously make it look more like the Hummer. But from year two, obviously McLaren signed. I'm sure we'll see some more manufacturers signing up in the next season, which is exciting. And actually, it's very diverse for McLaren to be doing SUV electric racing like that. So it's cool to see them branching out. And I'm sure that we'll see a lot of other brands follow suit. Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest with you, who the next ones to be revealed will be. But I think there's still a lot of control over the car for the next couple of seasons. So I think there's small things you can start to change with the suspension and parts like that. But I think in terms of the actual car, is staying relatively across the board, just for that reason of having a fair chance for everyone, I guess, and to have all the teams with a fair shot of the championship trophy.
But the idea would be to ultimately get car manufacturers involved, just like you have in rally now, in the World Rally competition.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know that those conversations are happening with every team all the time, the same way, you know, Formula E saw that as well. And it becomes a sort of manufacturer's pool. And I think because it's electric, obviously, it's a lot more attractive and it ticks a lot more of the boxes that those manufacturers are looking to tick now. With, you know, in the UK, we have a ban on combustion engine sales in 2030. So it's only a few years off now. So I know that from a marketing and an advertising point of view, it doesn't make sense to be supporting championships that are fully combustion engines without renewable fuel sources. So it's making sense from that side. And I think it's a good time to be involved in electric racing from my career perspective as well, because, you know, it's inevitable in a way that kind of switch in the motorsport scene. And we're seeing it a lot already with, you know, Formula E and now Extreme E.
And I think for the automotive manufacturers, when you think about it, you're racing in all these extreme conditions. And we have to admit, although the desire for electric cars is growing very, very quickly and more are being sold, it's still relatively in its infancy compared to internal combustion engine cars. So the dust, the vibration, the heat, the cold, I would imagine it's a great testing ground for this new technology. Everything from batteries to electric motors to managing power. How do you think the impact that the Extreme E can have on the automotive industry, based on the fact it's such a great testing ground for all the new technologies related to EVs?
I actually think Extreme E is a massive platform for the future of electric cars. When you think of even just a manufacturer developing an electric car, or not an electric car, you know, you think of a car and the rigmarole it has to go through and the terrains and the, you know, we see them. When I was working up in the Arctic Circle, I used to do some instructing on the ice lakes up there in the winter. And next to us would be the Porsche testing ground, the Audi testing ground, because they all have to take them to the extreme environments to test right. them, to test them, to test them. To
yeah, see they if all break test or... in deserts and in the Arctic. All the car manufacturers do that.
Yeah. So I think this is almost like, you know, killing two birds with one stone for them if they're to get involved. And, you know, I'm still new to the electric side. For me, this is a new, very new way of racing, and we're thinking a lot about the battery temperature and the state of charge. So it's new from that sense. But actually, I think a lot of the skills cross over from traditional motorsports. So it's quite easy to kind of fit. To be honest with you, I find it easier to drive because you have a brake and an accelerator. You don't have a clutch and gears and all of those things. And you have the instant power.
And instant torque to swing the car around, whatever
yeah,
you might want to do.
You do have instant torque. So as soon as you accelerate, you have the power. So you don't have to think about carrying as much momentum. And they're powerful as well. And so I think from the manufacturer's side, it will be really important for them to become involved. Because also, I think there's a lot of questions about reliability with electric cars and safety. And, you know, we can roll these cars and you know, it can still be
with
safe.
With the heavy batteries and everything.
Yeah, and they're not going live. They're not bursting into flames from that side. I think, you know, it's important to be showing that and to be showing that they are just as good from like the off-roading side and the performance side with the speed. I'm not saying that the technology is perfect.
Well, this is a way to accelerate that development.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you look at it from, you know, a consumer point of view, there's a lot of things around charging points on the roads and at service stations. When all of that starts to cash up and when it becomes a lot more accessible and in the everyday, I think that's when it will really come into play because people will really be considering. And when the cars come down in price, hopefully, the electric cars, hopefully, they'll kind of come down to the other cars in the market when they become a lot more popular and a lot more normal, I guess. Then I think a championship like Extreme E will really come into play when you're comparing a McLaren SUV electric car to a Porsche.
Do you own an electric car?
I don't yet. No. I'm working with Land Rover now, so I am getting a hybrid. So I'm kind of going halfway.
Yeah. If you could buy an electric car, which one would you pick?
Oh, do you know, I think I've only driven one fully electric. I've driven the Tesla. I think that was the only electric car I've driven. So it'd probably be the Tesla. I like the games on it. I don't know if you've been in one. They're very cool. I like that.
Now, there's another side to the electric car, because if you charge an electric car with dirty energy that's from a coal-fired power plant, it's not nearly as good, and obviously far from being as good as charging it with clean energy, with a sustainable energy source. And that's one of the keys to Extreme E. And in fact, Siemens is involved with wind turbines and electrolysis machines. And I believe that hydrogen is actually used for charging the cars ultimately in Extreme E. So it's truly a clean energy source. And that's an important part of the future for electric vehicles, for them to really achieve what they need to achieve from an environmental standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to trace it back, as you say, to the starting point, because if the source isn't renewable, then you might as well be running with combustion. You know, it has to kind of follow the environmental messages. And so it's cool to see that the only byproduct is actually water from this energy that we're creating. So I saw it in the middle of the desert. And it's kind of these fuel cells, they're kind of like containers. And that we actually explained this. We had the guy that developed them there explain this to Prince William as well, which was interesting to hear it straight from him. And he was sort of saying, I'm no scientist, so I'm not going to try and go into the scientific terms of it, but you basically have hydrogen and then you do something to it. You create the energy that we need and you end up with water as the byproduct. And I think that water is actually being used then to wash the cars. So when we got the muddy, we're then able to use that to clean the cars in the middle of the desert or wherever we are. So
the exhaust of your cars, those big SUVs, electric, is water.
I've been really impressed with that. And I think it's really cool to see that, because obviously I think that's one of the biggest questions around. I was listening to a podcast the other day and when I was driving, and it was talking about how green are our electric cars really. And it was saying they're only as green as the energy source that they're coming from. And I think that's, you know, not just talking about performance side now in extreme, but that's, you know, very true from consumers when they're thinking about buying it. So hopefully technologies like that will filter out and become a bit more mainstream and maybe even make onto the national grid, who knows.
Other thing about Extreme E, as you've mentioned, is the fact that there's a woman and a man on every team. And so now, throughout the entire competition, you're working very closely with your male teammate. How do you think men and women, if there is a difference, I would imagine there might be, but how do you think they approach the competition and racing? How is it different? How is it the same?
I think it's cool to be working alongside a teammate. You know, I'm working alongside Timmy. And normally when your teammates, you look at Formula One and Bottas and Hamilton, for example, and you see that they share info, but they don't share enough to let the other one have an edge on them. In Extreme E, everything is shared because the faster he can go is it's better for me. So all of the info that we can gather together is brought together. So obviously when you're racing against, and it's no secret that the men have more experience in the championship. We've got like 9-time world champions or whatever. So when you're actually in a team with a teammate who's got experience and is able to share that, it's really invaluable. It's like having a driver coach with you there all the time. But I think what's been interesting and what wasn't really expected is the pace of the girls compared to the guys. There's not a big gap. We're mixing it in the middle of the guys' times. There's no sort of, these are the male times, and then you can see there's a 10-second gap at the female time start.
Have you ever had a run where you're faster, or are you usually faster than Timmy? What does Timmy say about that?
Oh, no, I think, you know, it's all part of it. We were just from testing at the beginning of the year, and it was really cool to see everyone kind of swapping times. And obviously, we're trying different stuff all the time on the car, so we'll constantly be going with different setups and different suspensions. And Timmy, we was looking at some race data, and I was better on the slow corners, and he was better on the fast corners, and then we're able to just share that info. I mean, he's excited because he wants me to do well, and obviously, I'm the same for him. So
you've beat a WRC rally champion then?
Oh, no. He's an amazing driver. He's very, very quick. I think he's had some of the fastest times out on the track as well when we've been racing. So that's really cool to have him as my teammate. But yeah, I mean, we don't really have separate times on when we're actually racing. It's only really in testing that we can look at the data, because when we're racing, we'll actually have different tracks. So if he starts the race, he goes off the start line. And then if I'm second, I'll be in the pit lane and my time will start from there. And then I'll be in dust of whoever's in front. You can't compare the laps because they are different layouts to the finish line. And we don't really look at it comparing ourselves against our teammates, but you compare yourself in the way that there's no set rules for who starts the race. So some races, and you don't really know until you get to the start line and you look across to see who's next to you. But some races, you have the guys starting against the girls, and it will be team tactics as to who's going to be starting and who's going to be starting the second lap. So it's exciting from that side. I don't think that there's anything different in the way that the females race or the way that the males race. I never look at a car next to me and think, oh, there's definitely a girl driving that.
Just racing. Get out there and race.
Yeah, exactly. The same as it would be if you were going go-karting, you know. You wouldn't be thinking about who's in front of you. You just know that you want to beat them.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just a go-kart with a number on it and everyone else has a helmet on. You can't tell. You just got to win. You did quite well in the desert. I believe you came in second. You and Timmy came in second. When you're racing, there's all these details like, oh, should we raise the tire pressure 1 PSI or a quarter of an inch or a thousandth of an inch to adjust the suspension or this or that. But you came in second. And in one of your runs, you were running on 3 tires. So basically one tire was doing nothing. And I'll tell you, I saw the video of it. It was very dramatic and all the dirt you were kicking up. And I mean, what's it like? You know your tire's blown. Any second, who knows what might come off of it and get stuck. What's it like driving a car with just 3 wheels in a competition like this?
Well, to be honest, in rally, it's quite common to have punctures. And I'll always say to my co-driver, how many kilometres is it until the finish? Because you know if you stop, you'll lose, you know, roughly around 2.5 minutes.
So you've done it before. It wasn't a big deal for you.
Yeah, so you have to change tyres. And then you on a rally stage, you'll try and figure out if you're going to lose more time by stopping and changing the wheel, or if you'll lose more time by just carrying with it and obviously being a bit slow because you've got a puncture. But you try and figure it out. So if you're at the start of the stage, you'll have to stop it and change it. But if you're at the end, you can get away with driving with the flat tire. And so I knew something was up, and it actually happened in Timmy's lap, and it was kind of a slow puncture. So apparently when I pulled out, the other team's mechanics saw it. to be honest, it was so loose because we're not racing on a prepared track. We're like on bumps in the middle of the desert and there's holes and there's all sorts happening in these sand dunes. So you don't really ever feel like, you know, the car is 100% in control. It's very loose. It's very, you know, all over the place on the rear. So I just thought, oh, it just, you know, the track's getting worse. And obviously then I realized when the tire kind of popped off that what was happening. And then the engineers just sort of saying, just keep the pace. So then, you know, that you just kind of, in my head, all I was trying to do was lose as little time as possible, because I knew that the qualifying time was added to the next qualifying session and that would determine who made it to the final. So it was really important for me to try to not back off and just to try and limp with the car home. But yeah, I was surprised because normally I'd be told off for getting a puncture, but that was quite celebrated, I think, because it got the coverage on TV. Yeah, it probably looked a lot more spectacular outside than what it felt like inside the car.
Well, I'll tell you something that's very interesting about that video. And you don't have a full face helmet. And for those that aren't familiar with racing, there's nothing in front of your face, at least your mouth and your chin. Obviously, your eyes are always open regardless of what kind of racing. It was very interesting to see all the facial gestures that you were making, sort of biting your tongue maybe. I'm thinking, I wonder if all race car drivers do that, because you never get to see their faces. I thought was really, really. You know you did all that while you were driving?
To be honest, you can watch any video of me and I'm doing that all the time. It's just the way I drive. And quite a lot of drivers are actually the same. So Sarah Price, who's from America, she's in the championship. She said we had that conversation. Apparently she does it the same. I'm sure you'd see it in Formula One, but they all wear full face helmets. So you don't see it. I think it's just a concentration thing. Some people stick their tongue out. Or
I bet you all drivers do that. Because after I saw you do that, I still race go-karts sometimes. And I noticed, God, I'm gritting my teeth. Who knows what other kind of facial gestures I must be doing.
I get teased about it. So I said to my team, right, that's it, I'm being a full face. But they said, no, you have to keep it. My engineer said that he can actually tell about what I'm feeling in the car now by my facial expression. So I think it's useful.
They know exactly what to do when you come in, right? Let's make this adjustment. That, when the tongue is to the left, it means this.
It's like a Morse code.
I want to finish off and talk a little about women in motorsports. Why is it so important for you to get more women involved in the motorsports?
I think it's you know, it's really cool to be raising the visibility of it, of women in motorsport through a championship like Extreme E, where you're not creating a single mate or a championship just for the females and not comparing yourselves to the men. I think it's one of the sports where we cannot compare ourselves to guys, which is really exciting. It's the way I've grown up. I've never thought of myself differently, or I've never been interested in just beating the girls. I wanted to beat the fastest driver, regardless of who they are. So I think it's really cool to be having, like, showing the visibility on mainstream TV to people that actually there's seats and these are professional drivers at the top of their sport here, and they're females, and they're there. Yes, of course, in the first year, it's one of the championship regulations, but hopefully we'll see it start to filter into the other filters of motorsport as well, whether it's single seater or track racing. Hopefully we'll start to see more girls coming to the top on merit in the future. And I think the only way to really do that is to encourage girls at a young age to get involved with motorsport. So I've worked with Susie Wolf a lot, actually, on her Dare to Be Different campaign when she started that up in the UK. And she used to help me a lot with my career as well when I was starting out. And we actually had the same manager for a while. So yeah, I know Susie well. And she did some great stuff in her early days, where we would get schools together and we'd have a Sky Sports presenter from Formula One, a mechanic, an engineer, a driver, and we'd have little stations and we'd get people from school to come, and the girls would be, you know, trying to pit stops on the Formula One car and changing tires and talking about the aerodynamics. And by the end of the day, they were inspired and thought that they could have careers in motorsport. Whereas they came in thinking, oh no, there's no girls on the Formula One lineup. That means that there's no options for me to have a career in the sport. And so now it's nice. I think it will take a while to filter through to the actually seeing an impact at the top level of sport, because there's so many other things that affect whether you're going to have a champion or someone that's, you know, got everything that it takes to make it. The same way as not every guy makes it. But I think it's just about, you know, increasing the numbers.
Well, if you go back a generation, they never had, young women, young girls never had the exposure to seeing women in motorsports like what you're doing here. I recently saw a documentary about Janet Guthrie and the difficulty she went through, where there the racers were saying, oh, a woman could never do this. But now that's not even discussed. And just doing things like you're doing here shows that there's possibilities for young girls to do this. But it's not just about driving. I know you're involved in many different programs. Dare to Be Different is one of them with Susie. I think Michelle Maton is involved in things like that. But that brings in other aspects of motorsports. So it could be driving, could be engineering, could be marketing. Can you tell us a little bit about Dare to Be Different or any of the other, what are some of the other programs that you're involved in? And maybe give us a little story or something that, or really something really impressive that's shown the impact that some of these programs has had on young girls and really just young people in general and making them interested in all aspects of motorsports.
Yeah, I think, you know, I work with Women of the Future as well, which is a UK kind of run charity or an organization, but it's not just about motorsports. So you have people that are CEOs or, you know, I think we had a fighter pilot from India and we connect in London once a year. And there you get to have hear stories of the women and what they're doing and how they got to where they were. So I always love to reach out and branch out of my industry because I think it's very inspiring when you hear stories from other people and see how I think it's often very difficult, you know, even in like an office space. I never really thought about it, but you hear some of the women that have gone from right from the bottom of a company when they're their CEO and you hear the challenges that they face with whatever it might be, pay gap or, you know, all of the other things that they've had through their careers. And actually, then you think about motorsport and how you can try and change that and think about how we can improve as a sport. So it's quite inspiring to do that. I think, yeah, as I said earlier, some of the best moments that I've had and some of the best stories are seeing it firsthand when I've been working with the young girls. And I think just, you know, it's the classic thing of put your hand up at the start of the day and say, who's thought about becoming a racing driver or an engineer? And just seeing none of the hands up. And by the end of the day, everyone's hands up because they're really inspired to do it. And I've seen it at rally stages as well. I've got a little Czech girl. Well, she's probably not little anymore because I haven't done that rally for a while. But when I used to go to the in the European Championship, I would be literally in the middle of nowhere in a village in the Czech Republic, and it'd be sort of, you wouldn't think that they would be into rallying, but it just didn't seem like there was a lot there. Really rural. And on the rally route, it would be a road section. And every day on the recce and then during the races, I'd pull up and this little girl, she'd make me a poster saying, "Go Katie." And I'd never met her before, but I was the only one she was supporting. And she was a young girl. And I remember she sent me a letter and then I sent her a letter back and we became sort of pen pals on that. And she sent me some gifts from her home in the Czech Republic, which is really sweet. And she sent me some Polaroid pictures that she'd taken with her camera, from her disposable camera. So it's cool just to see people like that and to know that it might not be anything to do with motorsport, but to know that you're showing them that they can do whatever they want to do, really.
Oh, yeah. And they won't think twice that a woman could do that. I had the CIO of Stellantis, which is a major OEM in the automotive industry. And so she was involved in, similar to you, teaching young women about things they can do. And at one of her talks, a little girl raised her hand and said, "Yes, you have a question about what I do." She goes, "Yeah, I really would love to do your job because I want one of those yellow Jeeps like you got for free." So it, to her, this young girl being a CIO, "Oh, of course I can be a CIO. What's important to me is how do I get that free yellow Jeep?" So,
so not bad aspirations everything. To have.
Yes, exactly. Now, last question, then we'll get into our last bit here. So now you're an Extreme E and a great series and great goals it's having. Where do you see yourself in the future? Do you think Formula One, maybe IndyCar? What's your goal? What's your big goal in racing? It sounds like that's above your TV goals.
I think off-road's very different to single-seater. So, you know, Formula One is, they're karting from five and then it's a completely different route to go down, really. Mine is the off-road side, so it's a lot more. I guess you don't have to start at such a young age. Takes a lot, many more years to get to the top of it because you need so much experience on so many different surfaces and you need a lot of maturity in the way that you drive to not just be flat out at everything because it's like an endurance race, if you know what I mean. So it's about surviving as well. So I'm definitely on the off-road side. So yeah, I've got no experience in karting or anything like that really. So
when do you think we'll see you as world rally champion?
Oh, well, to be honest with you, I didn't even know, like, you know, you look back to a year ago and Extreme E didn't even exist. So it's really hard to say which championship you see yourself in the future, because I think the world of motorsport is drastically changing now with everything kind of, you know, going from combustion to renewables and electric. So I think Extreme E is a really cool place for me to be at the minute. I started in World Rally Championship last year before the pandemic, but obviously plans kind of went out the pan with that. So yeah, it would be great to revisit that at some point.
Well, you succeeded in TV, you're succeeding, doing a great job in Extreme E. I'm sure whatever you pick, you'll do a great job. Thank you so much for explaining Extreme E and showing all the possibilities from potentially being a dancer and ending up as a championship race car driver. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, and we always end up with what we call rapid fire. It's a series of questions, very short answers or longer if you'd like. And I'll give everyone a chance to get to know aspects of Katie that we didn't touch on the podcast. So if you're ready, what was the first car you ever bought or owned?
Oh, I've got two answers for that, because the first car, I think, would have been the one that my dad bought when I was younger, and I was telling you that I had my friends around. So I think that was Peugeot 106. So it was an old banger. Like, I couldn't drive it on the road. I was about 13. But my first road car was a Mini, and it had a checkered flag on the roof and on the wing mirrors. So I thought it was really cool when I used to drive to school.
Definitely racing influence.
Yes.
Did you pass your driver's test on the first try?
No. No, and I didn't admit that first for a while. I just didn't understand roundabouts. I was just really confused, because sometimes people would indicate and sometimes they wouldn't. And I think it was fine. He said that I pulled out on a bus, but I was well out the way of the bus by the time he got to me. But no, it was second time for me.
Roundabouts have been here in Boston forever, but I moved here from Indianapolis and we didn't have any there at the time. And the rule of the roundabout in Boston is do whatever you want, but don't look at anyone in the roundabout in the eye, because now they know that you can that you can see them. So it's anyways, that's how they do it here in Boston.
How funny.
Have you ever gotten a speeding ticket?
No, I don't think I have. No. Maybe in Europe, when it's a bit confusing though, isn't it, when you pick up a hire car? Actually, I think because I always hire, as I said earlier, I'm not old enough to hire a car, so my dad always comes with me. I think he's the king of speeding tickets, then puts them under my name.
So that he doesn't get all the bad points from the speeding ticket.
No, I think he takes them. Yeah, it's always a bit of a fine line, but I don't think I've had any in England, no.
So we like to talk a lot on this podcast about autonomous cars, and we refer to them like a living room on wheels where you're not driving, so you can do most anything you want. So imagine you have your ideal, perfect living room on wheels. You're on a 5-hour trip from Scotland, somewhere in Scotland down to London, say. What does your living room on wheels look like?
Oh, so I would definitely have, you know, the Rolls Royce ceiling with the stars. Definitely going to have that in there. I'm going to have, I reckon it would be like a business class flight.
Yeah, you can think of it. But why not go first class? You can have whatever you want.
Actually, that's true. I don't know why I'm limiting myself there. I'll have the Emirates service, I'd say. That would be the dream, wouldn't it? Nice blanket, kind of chill out TV. Although I'm not sure I would actually trust an autonomous car. So I think I'm getting ahead of myself here.
What person, living or not, would you want to spend that 5-hour car ride with?
Oh, that's a really difficult question. There's actually so many people. I can't limit it to one. I'm always really interested in history, like Winston Churchill, I think, you know, our old prime minister. He'd be cool to speak with. Marilyn Monroe as well. Oh, there's so many people that I
love. That's an interesting ride. Marilyn and Winston together.
Yes, together, yeah.
what question would you ask Winston? If you could only have one question, only one.
Oh, I'd just be interested to know, like, the secrets or... I've watched so many documentaries from his time, and I'm really interested to know what goes on behind scenes that never comes out. I don't think he'd tell me. He's probably signed loads of NDAs, hasn't he?
What car best describes your personality?
Probably the Mini. My first car I always see
with
myself.
The racing, with the checkered,
checkered stripes. Yeah.
What hobby do you have that has nothing to do with work?
Oh, that's a tough one. I love music. So yeah, probably I need to get back more into it. But yeah, I like playing musical instruments and dancing as well. That's still a favorite. Love Spanish music.
What do you wish you were better at?
Oh, that's a really good one. There's so many things that I wish I was better at. Probably playing the piano. I'd love to be a lot better than I am at that.
What do you wish you understood better?
Languages. Yeah, languages is a big one. Swedish, probably this year with my Swedish teammate. He keeps saying stuff in Swedish. He's like, oh, I wish you understood it, because it's a funny joke.
That's always a good excuse if you've told a bad joke. Yes. To an international crowd, at least. If you could have an answer to any question, what would that question be?
That's a really difficult question. I was thinking something about the future, but I actually don't really want to know. I think that would ruin it if you knew what was going to happen in the future.
How did the universe begin, maybe? That's the exact opposite.
Yeah, actually, I am really interested in space. Maybe that. And that's actually quite funny, because Timmy, my teammate, is every time I look at his phone, he's watching like physics videos on like the Big Bang and everything. He's obsessed with it. So that would be a good question for both of us, probably.
If you could uninvent one thing, what would it be? get rid of it. Gone forever.
Do you know what? It was interesting because I use it a lot and I rely on it a lot for my work and I actually quite enjoy it. But telephones, I think. I always say, oh, I love it when my phone goes out of signal. So I don't think I'd want to do it full time, but maybe just like a week off.
And if you could magically invent one thing, what would that be?
I'd love to have like a fast form of transport, you know, where you don't, like, I spend a lot of time in airports and stuff, just like a click of the fingers and you're there. I feel like I'd save so much time.
Tell us something about yourself that would surprise your friends and your family. If you told them this, they'd say, oh my goodness.
I think my family know me better than myself, to be honest with you. I always think I've got so many things that are quite like unique. And then they're like, no, I knew that. I knew you were bad at parking. My sister always says that to me. I always think I'm a good driver. And then she's like, you're really bad at parallel parking. to be honest, I think everything's out there. I think my family know everything about me.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, if we ever have you again on the Future Car podcast, they'll have to tune in to figure out what that is.
I'll have some more time to think about that one. Yeah.
All right. We'll tell
maybe,
you what.
Maybe that means I'm an oversharer. Maybe that's the fact about me.
That could be. A lot of posts on Instagram. But if you come up with an answer to that, just send it to us. We'll put it in the show notes.
All right.
So
I'll let
everyone
you
know. Katie, thank you so much. That was a fun interview and very, very informative. And good luck in Greenland and beyond.
Thank you so much. It was great chatting to you guys. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.